Hello, welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. This is a new month. It's all going to be about what are some of the cybersecurity topics that are affecting the cybersecurity industry for the next 6 months and maybe in 2023 early as well. Now, the inspiration for this came in from the RSA conference as well as the B-Side conference that Shilpi and I are attending this week in San Francisco. Yes, that means this is being recorded from San Francisco. So it was not a live stream episode. It was an episode that was pre-recorded. So what does that really mean? This just means that for the rest of the month of July 2022, you would hear us talk about topics like, well, let's just start with the first one. It is CASM, or Cybersecurity Asset Attack Surface Management. What is it? Why do you even care? Well, let me start with, if you have heard the words SolarWinds, Log4j, the Okta issue that happened when a third-party customer service provider leaked their credentials, well, apparently got hacked. So things like that are part of a supply chain, and what builds a supply chain are the different assets you have in your organization. And in this episode, we had Akash Ganapathy from JupiterOne to talk about why asset management has changed in this modern security stack or the modern world that we live in for technology. Why is it important for you to probably move away from Excel sheets? Maybe stick around with CMDB still, but in a way that it makes sense for the modern stack. For example, if you have an incident response, you don't want to spend a lot of time figuring out who owns what asset, or is this an asset we're supposed to own? Or even worse, if you have Log4j, you don't want to spend time finding out if you have a problem with the asset management that you have, which needs to be periodically updated with the owners and whether you still have the resource or not as well. Now, traditionally, this has been done in an Excel sheet or some kind of a CMDB, but over time, Gartner and other people, yes, Gartner is responsible for another acronym called CASM, as we've been talking about this. So they have identified that there is a need for a separate category of product line for this. And in this episode with Akash, we spoke about some of the topics around CASM, for why do you need it, what is it required for, and for someone who has a team with the skill set to do this on their own, we even spoke about the open source repo that JupiterOne has called Stargaze, which you can use to basically make your own graph database of all the assets in a data graph format, which you can monitor for configuration as well as configuration tags, who owns the asset, and a lot more. So if you are someone who is probably skilled enough to do that and probably looking at solving an asset management problem in the modern technology stack that you have in your organization, this is the episode for you. Or if you know someone who's probably going through the experience right now of doing this, definitely share this episode with them. Thank you everyone, as always, for people who have been dropping in review and rating on Spotify and iTunes. And for those of you who have been listening while walking or driving or any other regular activity that you do, I really appreciate you folks making us part of your regular routine. And if you do get an opportunity, whenever you get to a desktop or a laptop, feel free to just head to www.cloudscapepodcast.tv and drop us a review or rating. It really helps us get more folks like yourself and help out more people like yourself. And one last thing, if you are in San Francisco, Shilpi and I are on the hunt for the best coffee, which is not Starbucks. So if you are someone who probably knows about a coffee and wants to say hello to Shilpi and I, definitely send us a DM on our LinkedIn or Twitter messages. You would find my Twitter handle on the show notes over here on the podcast, but feel free to DM and I would love to meet you in person and thank you for supporting us for so many years and shout to your coffee as well while we're at it. So I would look forward to saying hello to some of you who would be meeting us at RSA. And I would also look forward to saying hello to you on the next episode, which is going to be the next theme. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover in this. Enjoy this episode with Akash Ganapathy for CASM in the modern security stack. So talk to you soon in the next episode. Enjoy and stay safe.
As companies expand to the cloud, asset visibility worsens. The JupiterOne Cyber Asset Management Platform helps you get it back. JupiterOne provides context, understanding, and visibility into your entire cyber asset attack surface with over 150 integrations, including AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, and more. JupiterOne helps you answer complex security and infrastructure questions, understand the contextual relationships between assets, and build the foundation for your security program. Try it for yourself. Get started with your free JupiterOne account today.
If you're a software engineer, you have been there. It's 9 p.m., you're finally unwinding for work, your phone buzzes with an alert, something's broken, and your mind's already racing it. What could it be? Is it the back end or the front end? Is it global? Now the whole team is scrambling from tool to tool and messaging person after person to find and fix the issue. That won't happen if you get New Relic. That next 9 p.m. call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does, and you get access to the whole New Relic platform and the 100 GB of data free forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/CSP. That's newrelic.com/CSP. Hello, welcome to another episode of Virtual Coffee with Ashish for Cloud Security Podcast. This is not the live edition. This is a recorded version. So you would see this while we're in the US. So hey, we're at RSA. If you're at RSA, definitely come in. And another person who's going to be at RSA is my friend here. I'm going to bring him on. Hey, Akash, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ashish, what's going on, man? Yeah, actually, I won't be at RSA, but Jupiter
One. Don't do that. I'm just like, no, we're going to be at RSA. Like, okay, so where are you going?
So I'll be at Gartner Risk, actually, which is the same week. So you'll have to catch me there. That's in DC. But the whole Jupiter One team, we're going to have a lot of folks at RSA. I got that East Coast duty because I'm in North Carolina. So
fair enough. You're holding the fort there. Fair enough, man. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your path to your current role as well, man?
I am the head of solutions architecture at Jupiter One. So basically anything security, architecture, security engineering related that is customer facing roles to me. So that could be technical support. It could be anything, right? Like pro services, consulting, whatever. And the path is interesting. I used to own a business actually. Okay. So I ran a business for about 7 years in the machine learning space. So I came from like a cloud architecture and data modeling background. And so now I find myself kind of focused on data-driven security solutions in particular. So
we're talking about asset management as well. And I obviously get curious about, well, this was a problem that was solved ages ago, but we're talking about assets in the modern security stack. What is asset and how do you define it? I'm glad you referred data. And what is asset in a modern security stack?
I think we're all very familiar with the definition of an asset when you think about it from the perspective of what about my code repositories, my code modules, even the commits and pull requests to those repositories, for example. Think about your access roles, policies, access keys, code deploys, builds, all of these different software-defined assets in addition to devices, users, data, applications, et cetera. All those software-defined assets are just a massively growing bucket that I think people have a very tough time keeping track of.
If they have a tough time, I would have thought asset management would have been a thing ages ago, right? It's clearly not the first time we're talking about it. So what was done at the moment, that's not working in the modern security stack?
Asset management, 20-year-old plus problem, right? With solutions for a while, but the problem has changed. So now that there's this very granular definition of an asset, any of which could expose a vulnerability. So it's not like we're being unnecessarily granular. All of those things are very valuable and could be exploited if configured incorrectly or if there's a vulnerability in the code module and so on. So to date, you know, there's been a lot of reliance on, at the worst case, Excel sheets, just Excel spreadsheets of here are all my assets that we have and, you know, who owns it, how's it, what's the configuration, where is it registered, so on and so forth. But, you know, in the best case, there are, of course, databases, data lakes, different types of ways of doing this, but the CMDB being the most traditional problem, but not traditional, so to speak, still very, very useful, but, you know, not necessarily evolving with the amount of assets we need to keep track of today.
That's an interesting point because I used to tell people, funny, when you said CMDB is not traditional, because I used to be like, oh, this is such a cool thing. We'll talk about CMDB. So CMDB is not cool anymore. Is that?
CMDBs are necessary. They're lucky. They're no longer just cool. They're necessary. But yeah, I'm just kidding, obviously. But I think that CMDBs are focused on a certain type of asset registration, very premise focused. And when you look at kind of these cloud-based assets, right, you start developing an application in AWS or Azure, and you can unwittingly spin up thousands of assets related to policies, related to roles, related to API endpoints, and all these things that actually you wouldn't have realized were part of just turning on a host and connecting it to a database and making an internet-facing application.
So CMDB is a necessity as well, but at the moment, do you find that more people are still that split between Excel sheet and CMDB, even though we are, I guess, all moving towards a modern security stack?
Yeah, that's a good question. Hard to answer. I'd say most of the large enterprises, they have a CMDB solution in place, whether it's ServiceNow or someone else. And from our perspective, we don't compete with that. There's a lot that goes on in a CMDB around registration, et cetera. So, you know, we could talk all day about that. Not very exciting. Yeah. on the kind of small business side, when you're looking at a compliance team, there's definitely still Excel sheets for assets. They can't afford a full CMDB solution. So 100%.
Actually, offline, we were talking about the whole graph database thing that you guys are talking about as well. How does CMDB, asset management, and graph database, what's the link here? Like, you guys even have an open source graph database as well. So what's the link here?
Let's talk about graph databases first, and then we can talk about how we go beyond what CMDBs do or how we are different. Honestly, we've never competed for CMDB, but you know, it's very confusing because it's all related to asset management. So a graph database, everyone's probably heard of a SQL or relational database before. I presume that's just kind of part of the audience's repertoire. They're very familiar with tables and joins and you know how they're related. So a graph database is really focused on the connections between different nodes, as they're called, or entities, or in our case, assets. You have these different assets. What are they connected to? So let's imagine you have a repository or a database of all your cyber assets. Perfect, including code repos, modules, including access keys, roles, policies, all these ephemeral and software-driven assets. Great, you have that database. But when you think about it from like something like LinkedIn, the social media companies really popularized graph databases. LinkedIn tells you, is this a first degree connection? Is this a second degree connection? Is this a third degree connection? And I know, for example, that we're first degree connections. And I know also that someone else is a third degree connection. It's a second degree connection through Ashish. And that information, do we have that same knowledge of our cyber assets? Do we know what is this instance connected to? Is it connected to a network interface? Is it connected to a subnet? What else is on that subnet? So on and so forth. All these connections, how many degrees of separation, how are they connected? This data is really valuable and brings us to kind of what we do, which is modeling that attack surface in a graph database. And graph databases are just really valuable at modeling those connections between data. So,
And to your point, then the degree of connection, an example use case for this could be, I have a server that is, I don't know, hosting some kind of website or whatever. And so the degree of connection is, oh, I have a network as well. And so that network is first degree. And then there's another server which happens to be another network. That's the second. I'm assuming, I'm making up an example here, but I'm sure you have a better example. Is that kind of how you're thinking about graph database?
That's pretty much exactly how it is. And you gave like a great network example, but it could be like logical access too, like in IAM. What if there's some Lambda function and it has access to, it's using a particular IAM role that gives it access via an IAM policy to various data, you know what I mean? Like DynamoDB tables, S3 buckets, or whatever. This Lambda function essentially is 3 degrees away from that.
Yeah.
When you look at it from an asset perspective, you have a Lambda function asset, a IAM role asset, an IAM policy asset, and then finally those DynamoDB table assets or S3 assets or whatever they are. And just knowing that connection is very challenging. And what we focus on is kind of discovering those connections. You don't even have to register them.
I can understand now why maybe Excel sheet may not be the best solution for this as well. And I understand that if there are degrees of connection as well, and I'm sure there's specific use cases for this, but to your point about IAM role, I can see all my IAM role, but I can't see my IAM role between one account and another account. So this kind of helps unify that asset management from that perspective to go, okay, we are looking at this from a perspective of, this is your entire environment. Everything is connected via graph database. And I'm thinking more from a perspective that people who are trying to build this as well on their end, if they want to, go for it. That's the kind of thinking you're bringing over here. Is it something that you notice that people are not normalized in a way of thinking, that you kind of have to educate people on this? Because I feel like the whole Excel sheet is pretty straightforward, that, oh, I've got this asset here, which is server number 1234, that Ashish owns it, which is part of business unit, blah. This sounds like a very different kind of thinking.
All the kind of properties that you would manage in Excel will still be on an asset in a graph database. You know, you have an entity like a server, you still know the owner and the IP and when was it created and so on and so forth. All this information will still be there. The kind of part of the graph database, and honestly, we should talk about what is a chasm to some degree as well. And what is that all about? You know, a whole acronym that, you know, we have a new acronym we have to deal with a little bit. But the point of the graph database is, well, we'll discover relationships to other assets. Imagine if you knew in your Excel spreadsheet, like imagine if you could click on that first row, that server of yours, and it automatically took you to your user profile, Ashish, and you could see, all of your user identities and across the various systems that you have access to. Or you could then click on, is there a host agent installed on your endpoint from there? Something like that. So it goes beyond like IAM roles or access or servers. It's really, we're pulling in the data across the whole security program and mapping all of the relationships between them. And that ends up being very powerful data layer for various teams. You know what I mean?
Yep. And while you're on this, what is CASM? Why is there another acronym from Gartner? It's like, I thought I was done with CSPM, CNAP. For some reason, C is very popular with them instead of G. But yeah. What is CASM?
Good question. So it's Cyber Asset Attack Surface Management. That's CAASM. And it's kind of a mouthful. Don't get me wrong. I wish we got a three-letter acronym instead of a five-letter acronym. You know what I mean? But it's breaking it down into some key points. There's the cyber asset, then there's the attack surface, and then management. So cyber assets, we've kind of just already, you already asked the questions actually, like, you know, what is an asset nowadays? So we've had this idea of a cyber asset. It's not just your physical devices and endpoints. It's this granular software-defined asset. And then for the attack surface, that's what we were just talking about just now. Well, how do you actually determine what the attack surface is? There's been a business of external attack surface management, you know, understanding the perimeter, you know, can we get a tool to kind of bombard our public IPs and DNS and public facing sites and understand if they're vulnerable. But what about the internal attack surface? What about, you know, what if someone's inside the network? What could they access through lateral movement? What's the transient risks and so on and so forth? So the understand the attack surface from the inside out, including the perimeter, of course, is kind of the idea of CASM.
How do you see that play a role in what we were talking about from an asset management perspective as well, where there's a world of Excel sheet, there's a world of CMDB, and there's the world for likes of JupyterOne as well. It almost sounds like they're trying to cover the entire space with the CASM word. Like, how do you see that impact the space in a lot of ways?
I think the easiest way to think of CASM is it's a data layer. It's kind of like having a data lake where all your various tools in the security program, all your various endpoints, your cloud infrastructure, your scanners, vuln scanners, code scanners, they're all talking now through the CASM, through JupyterOne. We collect the data via API, so there's no agents to install, basically. We can just collect this configuration data and discover the relationships between them. And that gives you this ability to search it. That's really the key component of a CASM is, well, you collected all this data, but you don't just want to collect data for collection's sake. And unfortunately, that's what ends up happening is we have this really rich, valuable data sitting on these various tools that we don't actually use until there's an incident. And then we're scrambling in the consoles to find out, you know, what's the problem with this server? What's it connected to? You know, what's the problem with this user and this access they tried to do and so on and so forth. And we're just scrambling this particular vulnerability. Where is it? What repos is it on? And, you know, find out what the dependencies are. And that scramble is what we're trying to eliminate. If all that data was talking and connected, then you have a question about your environment and then you can just answer it. So we want to kind of be like a search engine for the security program. You just search for an IP and here's all the related assets, for example.
Just from that, as well from a realization perspective, that when there is an incident and suddenly people are trying to identify who owns this as well is a big question, where suddenly there's an incident, use the AWS example, we have an EC2 instance that you find is compromised. Everyone's trying to figure out who the hell owns this. Usually there are no tags in there. Great, but is that some kind of web server? I don't know, Cloud Security Podcast or TV is running on that EC2 server. Not that it does, but if it was, but that ownership bringing some kind of challenges as well?
Yeah, there's a number of challenges you just brought up. Ownership, configuration, hygiene, incident response time. So I'll talk about all of them kind of as quickly as possible. But when it comes to ownership, right, often things aren't tagged with the owner. We're able to make some inferences. Who has access? Yeah. And whoever has access could theoretically be the owner. So there's an ability to say, well, these are the users that have access. These are the functions or workloads that have access. Or these are the users that have access to a workload that has access. Like, it can really be multiple degrees of separation to answer that question of, here are the theoretical owners, right? And that's something that we can do quite well when you don't have an explicit owner defined. Now, if you do have owner tags, let's say that's part of your configuration hygiene. Let's say you know, between in our security program, me and Ashish's security program, you know, we're all supposed to tag our resources. And of course, Ashish, you wouldn't do that, right? Because
why would I do that? This is like my 2 seconds wasted, man. Like I could have done so much more in my 2 seconds.
Exactly. You're busy doing something much more important for 2 seconds. Yeah. but you know, so let's say you didn't tag it. You can actually, we'll ingest your tags, first of all. Then you can find any resources that are missing tags that you're supposed to have. So that ends up being pretty useful from a configuration hygiene perspective. It's a different kind of use case, it's more proactive. It's less, you know, reactive to a problem or misconfiguration, but it's very forward thinking. It's useful. Can we manage this configuration hygiene through automation and alert on at a low level, medium level, when these tags are missing? Maybe it's infrastructure as code tags, maybe it's, you know, owner tags and so on. But then you talked about an incident too, right? You have an incident around some server, the response time. When you think about digging into the AWS console and you have to find out what's the IP for this instance, that's the easy part. What's the subnet that it's on? What's the security group protecting it? Is there a subnet, you know, level ACL that's granting access to the internet or not granting access? Is there VPC level configurations, the internet gateway configurations, any IAM access to data? And you start thinking about all this stuff that could be in the blast radius of this incident. What can this host do? Shared SSH keys, you know, all this stuff. It turns into hours of investigation, especially for something critical. And because you have to double check everything too, you know what I mean? So triple check even. So that's where, you know, just having all of it discovered, you just see, literally just visually see what's connected to this asset, all the other assets and their configurations. I mean, it becomes pretty invaluable in that incident response scenario.
Pretty good use case for a Chasm for being used for an incident response thing. Wait, so would I be right in saying, sounds like Chasm as a space is cybersecurity asset management. You can use it for incident response as well. Asset management, it would not replace your CMDB, but it definitely would help you at least manage the attack surface. I'm going to quote the AA in the attack surface, I guess. So it would help you manage the attack surface in your modern technology stack.
I'd say that's accurate. We're doing discovery of these relationships. Everyone has this data already. This data is in your consoles. This data is in your scanners. This data exists in your environment. But is it actually actionable? Can you do anything with it? And do you know the relationships? Those are typically unknown. Like, what is the correlation between all of this data? So we're really discovering those relationships, and we are discovering assets that people don't know about in the cloud, for example. You know, a CMDB focused on premise device registration, yeah, we don't do that. But when you're talking about discovering all your assets, when you're a completely cloud native org, you don't even need a CMDB.
You find that there are non-cloud assets as well. I feel like nowadays, I don't know, 5G is the new rave, but it's also becoming a lot more driven by, hey, your server may not only be in cloud, there might be an IoT device, there might be other to what you were saying about the stack. Does the Chasm space kind of cover that as well?
If you're talking about IoT, like network asset discovery, let's say, right?
Yeah.
That's definitely another place where, you know, we're not trying to be a scanner of any kind. So we wouldn't be a network scanner, code scanner, endpoint scanner. And so network asset discovery fits in there. We actually would have integrations to a network asset discovery tool, pull those assets into our tool, into our Chasm Jupyter one, and then have those assets there from that point on, can make the connections to other resources and so on. But we wouldn't do the network crawling ourselves, analyzing
the packet and so on. So. Yeah, sorry, I was asking more, in your mind, does the Chasm space cover that as well? Because it sounds
Yeah, 100%. The actual assets have to be part of the Chasm. Literally anything that could be an asset. Actually, if you look at, we have a lot of open source code. Our data model is open source. You mentioned our graph is also open source. We've open sourced 70 plus integrations. Someone could literally spin up Neo4j and have like a graph database Chasm of their own with our exact integration code tonight. And that could be just something they experiment with and completely for free. The reason why I'm mentioning all that is the data model is completely flexible. We're not set on any particular schema. There's many, many dozens of asset classes, and you could theoretically add whatever asset class and type of data that you want if it's not something that we're already categorizing as an asset class. So, you know, if we haven't thought of something, it's pretty comprehensive, to be honest. I have a tough time thinking of assets we haven't thought of, but
right, you know, wow, okay.
But if you're on there and you're like, here's an asset they haven't thought of, you can literally contribute to the data model. PR is welcome.
Yeah, well, actually, because and it's open source as well. That's what, and I think that's what I love about the space that you guys are in a way. Well, maybe Tesla is a great extreme example. Like, you know, I kind of feel like it's one of those ones where you understand the graph database can provide this opportunity to the wider community, and that's where using a graph database with the data models available, with the integration available, I think is a great way to at least dab into this, especially people who are probably in the asset management space and are technical as well. And talking about technical, do you find that asset management space is becoming a lot more technical with all the modern stack? In terms of like the people who have to work in the space, they have to be a lot more, say, if they don't have something like a CMDB or a Chasm or an Excel sheet, but they have the drive to be the next asset management person, they can literally just use that repo that you guys are open sourced and the graph database integration and just basically make their own for the company, like their own platform for the company if they want to.
Yeah, they absolutely could. So it's called Starbase, by the way, the open source Starbase, yeah. The open source repo. And absolutely. If someone is a security engineer, and we actually have folks that do this at very large companies, and they just reach out and say, hey, I'm using your tool. It's amazing. I can't believe you guys just open sourced all of this amazing code.
Yeah, that's definitely fascinating though.
So. And from our perspective, this is foundational to the philosophy to the company is security is a basic, right? You know, our founder, Erkong, says graph-based security included. There's no part of security that should be gated. And obviously we can provide value as a business and our user experience, our applications, our query language, all this stuff that's very valuable for our enterprise clients. But if someone is willing to just spin it up and get going, absolutely, more power to you. It's documented, it's there, you know what I mean? Yeah. And we hope people will contribute back, you know, just send some PRs and build on it, right? And that would benefit us in the long run. So
that's pretty awesome, man. And actually, for talking about the skill set as well, where do you think is a good resource for people to find out more about the Chasm? And because I imagine a lot of people would be listening to this and going, well, I'm a cloud security engineer. I'll put the Starbase link in the show note. The whole Chasm space itself, where can people learn? Because I imagine there are people with full-time jobs for this as well. So what kind of resources can you recommend for people to get more information about Chasm and the asset management space?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I want to go back to another question you asked, which was, is the space getting more technical? 100%. I think every job is getting more technical, regardless of what space you're in, right? Even like if you're in pure marketing or sales development or something like that, there's a lot of tools and technology you got to know now to be successful.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of SaaS applications, they're quote unquote SaaS, but they're trying to train to be technical.
Exactly, right? And so security is absolutely not an exception. And I think the job of an analyst is quickly turning into a job of an engineer, right? Where you're expected to know much more than just, hey, this is a vulnerability. This is the CVE related to it. Let me go collect the data around it. That is extremely important work that now has to be supplemented by, oh, but do you know how to remediate it in the command line? Do you know how to actually go like fix AWS, and are you a cloud architect, and all this other information that it is going beyond the original scope of an analyst.
Yeah.
And I think anyway, when that 100%, and we do see that the most organizations that have successful security programs, this modern security program, invest heavily in security engineers, and that benefits them because they can automate stuff. They can do things at scale much more easily. Anyway, that could be a whole nother conversation, but
fair enough.
To learn more about Chasm, it's a new space. I do recommend the Gartner cycles on it. They have good information. We obviously on our website have a lot of information about Chasm and the similar spaces. So you could go to askj1.com, and that's actually our documentation as well. So you can read about all of our documentations there. If you want to know more about the actual engineering side of it, all the repositories are public on GitHub. Starbase is the public repo for the open source graph database, which includes visuals on the integrations. So yeah, it's all out there. We're probably one of the sources of education right now for sure. So
that's pretty awesome, and good to know that as well. I'll put those links in the show notes as well, so people are aware of it. So that's pretty much what I had time for, but I do have three fun questions for you, man. I think this is kind of like the thing that we do. So people get to know Akash beyond the technology side as well, of how super smart he is. So just three questions, not too many. So first one being, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on technology like your chasms of the world?
Okay, good question. So I play some tennis. I should play more. But recently I've been playing Elden Ring, which is a video game. Not going to lie, that's just the true answer. It's this video game by From Software. Just really, really enjoy it. For anyone who knows what it is, you know, DM me on LinkedIn and we can nerd out a little bit. But just beat it last weekend. So anyway.
All right. Wow. Okay, there you go. But I feel like I'm not going to make a crack a gaming joke at this point, because I feel like I haven't played games for so long. Next question. What is something that you're proud of, but is not on your social media?
Ooh, that is a tricky one. So I'm pretty good at dancing Bhangra.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, it's not on social media. I would have thought people would have recorded you doing a Bhangra somewhere.
I mean, it's I don't use Facebook and stuff anymore, but it must be out there somewhere. But I don't think a lot of people know that from a professional perspective.
But why? So that's pretty cool. I'm definitely feel like you should be challenged on that claim, though. You're pretty good at it.
Well, if you meet me at Gartner Risk, maybe you can persuade me to share.
for sure. At Gartner, we could totally do that, man. All right, cool. That's a great answer, by the way. Yeah. Third and last question. What's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
Good question. Let's see. Cuisine. I'm hesitating. I don't want to give two answers, but because obviously I'm Indian, so I have to resist because I just love my mother's food, right? You can't ignore that.
Enough, yeah.
But I will say maybe like authentic Sichuan Chinese food or like sushi, nice. Like a kind of like more authentic sushi as well. I do like both of those a lot.
But mother's cooking is still the best, man. I'll take the answer as well. It's definitely the best. Especially if she is listening to this, she's like, but you definitely need the brownie points, man, for the next meal as well.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. She's probably not listening, but if she is, love you, mom.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm sure one day she'll like, oh, gosh, I was on an interview on YouTube. So I'm sure definitely make it. But dude, where can people find you, man, for to connect with you and get to know a bit more about the chasm space and everything else you're doing? Where can people find you on the socials?
Yeah, 100%. LinkedIn is the best place. I will definitely accept your connection and chat with you. Nowhere else, really. I'm not a big tweeter or anything like that. I'm more of a lurker. But LinkedIn is the spot. That's definitely the spot.
Sweet. Yeah. I'll put that link in the description as well for everyone. All right, sweet. Well, hopefully, thanks so much for coming in, man. Hopefully everyone else enjoyed the episode as well. And, well, Akash is going to be in Gartner. I'm going to be at RSA. So if you want to see us in person as well, there's an opportunity in the coming week. I don't know when Gartner is. What day is Gartner?
The 7th to the 9th, I think. June.
7th to the 9th. Also, it's still like almost like a three-day conference there as well. Two to three days.
The big day is the 9th, I think. So.
Yeah. Right. Okay. There you go. So if people want to meet Akash in person, he's signing autographs at Gartner. For people who want to see him there. And I'll be doing the same at the RSA conference. But hopefully I will see you all in the next episode. This is part of the RSA month as well. So you'll probably notice that there are no live episodes. There's a lot more different format this month. So we'll see you all in the next episode. But for now, take care. And hopefully you had a great long weekend. And I'll talk to you soon. Peace. All right. Thanks, Akash.
Bye. Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you for listening to that episode of Cloud Security Podcast. If you found some new information from that episode, we would appreciate if you share it with others. Share it with us as well if you have any good feedback or good learnings from the episode. We are on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you don't find us there, you can always go on our website, www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv, to listen to the latest episode. We appreciate your support in helping us grow. It helps us bring more guests. It helps us support the channel. So really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, and talk to you on the next episode.